Good morning to everyone. We're going to get started here in just a moment. It's good to see everyone out this morning. Appreciate everyone's attendance. As we, again, as we've done the last class, we'll let everybody have a little time to get settled in and all before we have a prayer. We're going to try to finish up a little bit here that we lacked from lesson three and then move on into lesson four. Should be some material. I didn't check again, but I think there was some this morning, lesson four and five material in the back, and I sent that out also by email. And from there, we'll get the additional lessons out by Wednesday night. So if you have those, you kind of follow along with what we're going to be talking about here in just a moment. Once we finish chapter 15 here, Rick is going to lead us in a word of prayer, but we're going to go ahead and get started. Again, before the class is going, if you'll notice, we'll have some of our review material scrolling at least part of the time, and then while they're getting stuff ready, sometimes it's got to stop and all. But those are things for us to remember, thinking about the generations, thinking about some of our key verses, thinking about chapter contents. So there's a lot that you can be working on at home. And then as you're sitting here kind of getting things together and thinking about getting your mindset for worship on, and look through those things as they're scrolling through. Well, chapter 15, we just briefly mentioned this as we came out of Abram rescuing Lot and meeting Melchizedek. And then, of course, having the exchange with the king of Sodom. We talked about that. And then we went right just very, very briefly into chapter 15, which was the covenant with Abraham. Here he has a vision from the Lord, and again it's and I can't remember counting how many times, but we have had multiple times where the Lord has reassured Abram that this is going to come to pass. This is going to happen, and I'm telling you this again, and as this is taking place, we have the verse there in verse 6, he believed in the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness. And again, I think it was mentioned last class, we see throughout his life a very strong faith, but the key to that is even a strong faith can be a stronger faith. And you can continue to build on that faith, and there's going to be times when your faith's going to waver, and we see that a few times in Abraham's life, but yet we see that the Lord sees what type of man this is, what type of person this is, and the progression that he continues to make, and yet he's still a man. And so we need to always remember the same thing with ourselves, that we're attaining to be better, to reach perfection, but we're always climbing is the way it is. We're never going to be, and we made this maybe the last class before, we're never going to reach the apex where we can just coast and just let it go, because we're always either climbing or we're either sliding down. That's two things we've got there. So the vision is important for Abram. And in this, there's concern. And we're going to talk about that some, but we don't have a little enough time today to talk about that. But he is concerned, as he shows on other occasions, how's this going to take place? What's going to happen? He has some thoughts in mind. And typically his thoughts aren't the right thoughts. And God has to, again, confirm to him and reassure him, this is going to take place. These promises will take place. They're going to happen. You can bank on it. It is going to take place. And so Abram is reassured. And so it's in this chapter that God not only tells him this as a promise, it is in a way sealed with the covenant. And in this case, God is the one that is, and we'll get into the whole thing about the meal, passing between it and all. And God is the one that does that because he's the one that's going to be the guarantee of this. This is going to take place. You don't have to worry about it, Abram. This is going to happen. Okay. Then the last thing before the prayer, he then tells him, I'll give you a little bit of insight about how that's going to take place. I'm going to tell you some future events. And so we're told about that. And what's the very brief picture that Abram gets? Well, that's this one question. And then we'll have our prayer here. What's in store for his descendants? Okay.
Okay.
It's interesting. It even mentions that about the great wealth, and they're going to come out, and they're going to come back to this place. And again, I have given this land, and he then gives boundaries even. So he gets pretty specific in that. So pretty impressive what we see in that very short chapter, chapter 15. All right, so brief there, catch up of a chapter, and we're going to get into the material for today in just a moment. We'll have Rick come up and lead us in prayer. All right, so if we go ahead and turn to chapter 16 here, we're going to pick up with our material today, and again, moving pretty briskly through what we want to cover and all. And so again, you can take a glance at your questions. We'll hit some of the things in those. But of course, we're trying to go through and look at this as a narrative and find out what's going on. And also, we have what we just discussed, the reassurance by God that these things are going to take place. And so then interjected here, chapter 16, as that's going on, we come back to the story of what's happening with everyone else. We have the birth of Ishmael. And the birth of Ishmael comes about because Sarah has a plan. Okay? And she thinks it's a great plan, but is it a great plan? Or is it going to cause problems? That's exactly right. So she thinks, and again, this is not something uncommon. We've seen it a little bit already about concubines and handmaids and multiple wives. Not that it's good by any means, but Sarah thinks this is the way. It's not going to happen for me. I've got to help this happen for Abraham, for my husband. And so she has this plan to give her handmaid Hagar, and that happens. And it seems like pretty soon after that, there is tremendous regret and jealousy and probably lots of other emotions going on there. So she is concerned that this is not what I needed to do, but now the wheels are in motion, so to speak. And so that's taking place. And so what does her regret cause her to do that impacts the other key character in this episode here? Okay. So she thinks this is not worth it. I'm not doing this. I'm getting out of here. I'm out. And so she flees. She's on the run. And is this going to be permanent? We'll just ask it that way. Is she getting away? In other words, who has to intercede here to take care of that? Stephen? Sure. And so in this fleeing, this first time here, because we actually have two times there's a fleeing. As she goes out, who meets with her?
Angel of the Lord.
Okay. So angel of the Lord speaks and basically tells her what? Okay, return and submit. Okay. There's lots of lessons there. We'll just leave it at that. A very simple statement. Return and submit. Many times all of us face some situations, not exactly like that, but where we have to learn to submit, or we have to submit ourselves to things that maybe aren't so pleasant. So she does return, and we see at the end of this chapter here that everything kind of takes place as the Lord had said it would. And how old is Abram once he gets this son?
86.
So he is 86 years old. He's been in the land for a while now. And he has this son, and of course, to some extent, I think they're thinking, is this the son? Is this going to be it? And we'll find out a little bit more about that in just a moment. One thing I want to take a note of for just a moment here is, and I think I saw this in the Waldron book, reading so many different ones and going back and looking at it, we have now seen God mentioned in a lot of different forms, revealing a lot of different things about him. So let's go back and see if we can think of a few of them. So early on in the creation, in the first couple chapters there, how do we see God referenced? What's some different ways he's referenced early on in the narrative of Genesis?
Creator.
Creator, okay. What else?
Force.
Okay. All right. So Creator, the Spirit hovering over the waters. What else have we seen? Either characteristics or names that people have they've interacted with Him have given. Anything else that's come across? All right, His Provider. How did so we're moving forward. How did Melchizedek introduce Him? God Most High. And now here, how does I think it's in this section here? How does Hagar identify Him?
God who sees.
God who sees. So we're getting lots and lots of different things brought out to us, and then we open. I believe we open one of the chapters here pretty soon. Maybe this one. We see Him again, given one more. I think He, in fact, introduces Himself as this, if I'm remembering correctly. How does He introduce Him?
God Almighty.
God Almighty. So we're getting a lot of information in a short amount of time in here, a long period of time in the Genesis account, but we're seeing lots and lots of different things about God whom we serve, the God, the Creator, God Almighty, God who sees, lots and lots of things for us to consider. So just keep that in mind. That's kind of a side thing for us to think about. So chapter 17, the sign of the covenant. First of all, we see the name changes, Abram to Abraham, Sarai to Sarah. And just real quickly, we did the thing early. It's on the scroll. The generations, we have things connected to their names. God is making a statement here because He's changing their names to make a statement. So somebody tell me for both of them. Abram to Abraham, what are we going from to? Father of nations. And what was Abram? Do you remember what Abram meant?
Father.
Sometimes they'll say exalted father, I think. So father to father of many nations, father of nations. All right, then somebody else, Sarai to Sarah. Not a lot of, well, there's some change there, I'll say that.
Some respect.
Right.
So Sarah's
yes.
I don't know intensity role.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Just a little more punch to the name and all. All right, so we see this take place. The other thing we'll take note of is, again, a typical historical narrative. We don't jump from one episode to the next. We don't jump typically 13 years. But we jump 13 years here to the age of 99. And this is where we get not only we've had the promise of what's taking place, we've had a covenant to reassure Abram that this is going to take place. And now God is going to go even further and say, we're going to have an earthly or a fleshly sign of the covenant. And what will that be?
Circumcision.
Okay. And, what does he designate? When's that supposed to take place?
Eighth
day. And who is it supposed to take place with in the family?
All the males.
Everybody. Okay. So everyone's supposed to be a part of this to signify again, because it's kind of sealing that and on your part, Abraham and your family, this is how you're showing that you're staying in this covenant, that we're in this covenant together. My side's covered. Okay. I've got it. This is a sign of the covenant on your side. All right, I've already mentioned that. And then finally, with this sign of the covenant, then he again, another time, we just get this over and over and over, that this is going to not come through Ishmael. It's not going to come through one of your servants or someone else. It's going to come through Sarah. Sarah is the one that's going to come through. And so we have the little, the exchange here that's coming up. We have laughter in two cases, but it seems to be two different types of laughter, because again, we get further information. Not only kind of can infer it a little bit here, but then we get information from the New Testament that kind of helps us with that a little bit, right? And so in this case, as Abraham is told this, what is his reaction? Since we know from what we know from the New Testament, what we know here, what type of reaction is this from Abraham about this going? This is going to happen soon. In 17 here, yes. All right. So he believes it. He fulfills the sign of the covenant, has everybody circumcised, and even with that, what about the laughter? What can we say about that laughter combined with what we know from other scripture? Is he like laughing in a, this is never going to happen. This got to be a joke. You're teasing me, Lord. I see. There's somebody else back here. Okay. So like an amazement. Not sure how, but I'm trusting you. I'm sticking with you. Yes, sir. Yes. And not only is it the son that the son of promise that he wants, it is with his wife, that this is going to come through his wife who has, think about it, all these years that has been, you know, kind of a, I won't say a mark against her, but in their society, in their times, that was something that surely had weighed on them for a long, long time. So those are lots of different things. In other words, different ways we can look at it that he believes this. He is following through, and again, signs of faith there. So Abraham obeys. He follows through and he does just what God says. He may not know every part of the details, and just like sometimes we don't know everything in the details about obeying God. Sometimes we just have to trust God. What he tells us is what we need to do. Okay? We don't have to necessarily find a formula for how, why do we do every little thing. Some things we can.
Chris,
go ahead.
Ask
right.
What all that means.
That's what I'm saying. I think he doubts along the way, and then God has to reassure him. No, that's not, that's what you think, but no, that's not what's going to happen. It is going to be Sarah. And then I think what Stephen, after that, then we see that he goes ahead, after that finishes up, and then he goes ahead and fulfills the sign of the covenant. So showing his faith. Well, Steve, I kind of got our order. Stephen made that point, then I kind of went back and, in other words, we have different things happening at different times. We see, it's almost like we see faith going up, and then there's a little bit of wavering. Well, is it going to be like this? No, you got it wrong. It's going to be this way. And then what we see kind of, to me, just kind of sum it up in 17, we see that then he fulfills the sign of the covenant by all of them, including himself, having this done. No, Stephen.
Commentary on
right,
him.
Sure.
And bless him.
Sure.
And so bless him.
Right.
Fine.
Right.
For Ishmael.
Sure.
Here.
And that makes sense because
we wish Ishmael
sure.
would have something. You know.
And we see, and I hadn't thought about that. We see that later with Abram, or with Abraham when they're going to be cast out again. He's really concerned about them. And then God reassures, and I think in that, and when we come up later, he reassures Hagar, I've got a plan for Ishmael. He's going to be okay. Yeah, I think there is some doubt in different times. I see what Stephen's saying also that the concern over a son he already has. So I'll think on that a little bit more and see if I can get my thoughts. Maybe I've got those out of order a little bit. Sam? Right. Stan? Yes. All right, one, Greg. Okay. that's a good point. Appreciate you bringing that one out. I think I've got that in my notes somewhere and going to jump over it and all. Again, it's the thing. God's got his side taken care of. You've got some responsibilities and you and your descendants have to fulfill these things and all. All right, let's move on to 18 then. And let's think about three visitors. That are going to come to him. He's still here around Hebron, here under the trees, here at Mamre. And the first thing we see, and we see this in two different chapters, is we see two relatives showing the very same type of hospitality. I just wanted to point that out, that we see hospitality shown here. And when I was reading this again, for some reason in my mind, when he brought water to wash their feet and all, I just for some reason went straight ahead to Jesus when he scolded the Pharisee. Remember, you didn't bring me any water. Hospitality, in other words, when you came into when you were invited in somewhere, there were certain things that were expected and you were supposed to fulfill. And he doesn't know who this is. He would have done it to for anyone. And I think that's a good lesson to come across there. And of course, then it's reinforced. We'll get over to Hebrews. So I think God thinks it's pretty important too that this took place. And so he invites them in. I like how it said, I believe it's in, let's see here, verse 5. After he gives them the water, and he says, rest here under the tree, and I will bring a morsel of bread. He brought a whole lot more than a morsel of bread. I mean, you're thinking, you know, he got out the peanut butter sandwich and gave to them. Instead, he puts a feast on, basically. I mean, he's going to take care of these people. And so while this is taking place, the meal is taking place, they make a revelation to him. What do they reveal to him? Or for sure at least one of them reveals as they're here having this meal with Abraham. Okay, so here another layer, right? This is going to happen. And in this case, it was in vicinity where Sarah could hear it. And so then this is the episode where have Sarah laugh as we get over to like verse 13 through 15. And in this case, we have a commentary here that apparently she is doubting it seriously because the Lord says, why did Sarah laugh? Shall I truly bear a child since I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I'll return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. And she denied it. I did not laugh, but the Lord said, no, but you did laugh. So we see the difference there. And I think I had a question. Again, we have to get commentary a little bit further from the New Testament. Did this, I can't remember how I worded it and all, but did she recover from this, in other words? And what does, I think it's Hebrews, what does Hebrews tell us about Sarah? If somebody wants to turn over there, I think it's 11:11. Somebody read Hebrews 11:11 for us. Okay. So she judged him faithful who had promised. So again, and I've tried to bring this out. They're human beings. We're human beings. Sometimes we are hard on these stories of the past, but how different are we sometimes? And how much more do we have to see and that's been revealed to us? And sometimes we can let our faith waver in the same way. All right, so Sarah's doubt there. And then we get to the end of this chapter here. I'm going to try to, looks like I've got about 10 minutes, so we're going to try to get through this episode with Sodom here. Abraham's intercession, I'm not going to go through the details of the whole exchange here and all, but it's interesting that we see that two of the men leave and they're headed to Sodom, and we'll pick up them a little bit. One of them stays, and it's identified the Lord, and so the Lord and Abram are talking here, and he reveals something to Abraham that will be very troubling for Abraham to hear. And why would this be of great concern to Abraham? Why would he even care? Nephew is there. Potentially, you know, could be others, but for sure Lot is there and his family. And I'm going to read into it a little bit. I think Abram's just concerned about all men to some extent, because he goes through a pretty lengthy discussion here about trying to get some mercy shown to the city of Sodom, or the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, right? So it's interesting there. We see, again, a lot of the characteristics of Abraham come out here. Humility, his mercy, his concern for others, concern, of course, for his own family, but he is deeply concerned about what's happening here, okay? Not to the point, though, if you notice, it's not, just overlook it, Lord. It's not that. Ignore what they're doing, but can you find some room for some mercy? All right, so let's go on to chapter 19 and find out, while that's taking place, these men are making their way to Sodom. And as we've already mentioned, we'll have to go back through this again, Lot, in a lot of ways, does the very same thing that his that his relative Abraham has done. He shows these men hospitality. He says, no, you're not staying out there. Please come in. I'm going to take care of you. And that is an important factor as we get into this story, because his hospitality is contrasted greatly with the depravity of the city, correct? So much so that we even see that Lot is willing to sacrifice, in a way, his own family, his own daughters, to safeguard these men that are under his care. It's kind of hard for me to fathom that, but it is, I think he sees he understands the importance of someone taken under your care in this way, that hospitality was that important when you had taken them under your roof, that you were supposed to protect them and all. The other part is, this creeping in of even thinking about this tells us how far and how low Sodom has gone. Not only what the men of Sodom are trying to do, but for Lot, to the position that he's in here. So with that taking place, they have to pull him back in, and blindness on the men that are out there. And in the meantime, while the night comes from that evening to the next morning, they have a revelation to Lot. What do they tell him? It's going to be destroyed. And what do you need to do? You've got to get out of here. We're going to give you a little time, right? And if you think you can reach anyone at the final hour, so to speak, this is the bottom of the ninth. And if there's anyone in this city that you think will listen to you, you better go get them. And this plays into, I think, a little bit of factor later with his wife. What sad news does he have to bring back to the house just a little bit later? No one. They've got daughters in the city, and their husbands think it's a big joke. What are you talking about? And so he comes back empty-handed. And from there, then, it seems that I'm sure there was no sleep that night. If morning has come, they're told, you've got to go. And they're still, it's like they're trying to find which bag they're going to use. They're trying to delay. I don't know if they're delaying, hoping that those other people show up. We just don't know. But there's delay to the point where these two men, these two angels, have to basically physically get a hold of them and say, you have got to get out of this city. And then the bargaining takes place from Lot, and instead of fleeing to the mountains, go to Zoar. And so finally, they get them out, and they move to the city. And as has been predicted, of course, the bargain that Abraham and the Lord had made, there's not that number found, right? And so it's going to take place. And so we see both men get to see this. Lot is in Zoar, and he sees this fire and brimstone come from the heavens, destroy his home and everything that he had, along with some of his family. He's lost his wife at this point. And then Abraham also gets to see this a little further distance and all, and he sees the same thing happen. And it's a terrible scene that we see here as judgment has come upon these cities and all. But if you can think about it, she disobeyed, but that longing, possibly for the city, but possibly for her daughters. And so they're back there. They did not show up, and they did not escape, and ultimately she didn't escape. Okay? All right. Any comments here?
Person.
Sure.
There's
no compromise for the sin. All right. And then mercy, tremendous mercy shown to Lot here. And then finally, the destruction of Sodom. And sad, sad commentary at the end. The chapter is a horrible chapter, just to point it out. But really, some of the wickedness of Sodom goes with Lot. And what happens with he and his daughters. And from that, of course, is another line here that's kind of connected to Abraham to an extent. It's part of Terah's family and all. We'll just leave it at this. What two nations will rise out of this wickedness that comes at the end of the chapter?
Yeah.
Moab and Ammon. And will they have any part to play in Israelite history later? Will it be good? No. It'll be kind of a thorn in the side, so to speak, as we move along. All right. As we're getting here, Jeff, where are we at? Three minutes? What we got? About two. All right. So here in chapter 20, we have this gentleman, Abimelech, who is the king of Gerar. And in Philistine, what we find out later, Philistine territory and all. And Abraham moves a little further south into this territory. Again, being nomadic, they're moving around to some extent. He comes here and they decide to pull out an old trick that they've used before. And it didn't work well then, but they decide to pull it out again. And that's the whole thing about, you're my sister. At this point, it's probably more so, he's a wealthy, powerful man. I want to protect that. I'm afraid they'll kill me. And Abimelech sees it as, hey, this is a wealthy man. I can make an alliance. This is going to be a fantastic alliance here. I'll marry his sister, and this will be great and wonderful. And I think I mentioned this last class. How did God introduce himself in the dream? Or what did he say first? You're a dead man. That's a good way to get a dream going, right? And Abimelech's like, wait a minute. I didn't know any of this. Please, you know, I'm an innocent person. And God says, and goes through and says, I understand that. I have stopped any attempt or anything that could happen that could mess things up here and all. But you need to get this taken care of, and you better take care of it quickly. And does Abimelech heed that warning? It seems that he gets with Abraham and he says, we need to have a conference ASAP in the morning, and we've got to deal with this. Okay. All right, we'll try to pick up with that. We'll try to catch up a little bit there. But I appreciate your attention this morning, all your comments, and we'll pick up here with the last part of chapter 20 and 21. Thank you.